Welcome to Deception in the Last Days with your host, Randy Shelton. Randy is a member of the Biblical Discernment and Research Center. He has been studying cults and new religious movements for over 30 years. Join Randy as he discerns the deception going on now in the last days.
I'm continuing in my liberalism series. And last week, as you may recall, I discussed Marianne Williamson and her connection to Marble Collegiate Church in New York City, where another arch heretic, Norman Vincent Peale, pastored for many years. And now this week I will look at Norman Vincent Peale, the second half of what I'm referring to as a heresy sandwich, because of their shared connection with Marble Collegiate Church. But first, as you may remember, I also talked about President Trump's past connection there at the church, and some of the bad, ugly, and good articles concerning Trump's present religious situation, and I would encourage and exhort you to continue to pray for our president. Now, in one of the articles I read last week, Hillary Clinton's name came up about her weekly Bible study for the last 8 years, and lo and behold, I noticed recently a few articles. I saw at least four articles about Hillary Clinton's present spirituality. Now, I realize this may sound like fake news, but actually it's really more about a fake person, and it's kind of amazing when you consider the past of Hillary and her husband Bill. But anyway, I've talked about somewhat about the progressive Christianity and the connection to the Clintons in the past. Now, first article I want to look at is Hillary Clinton considers making her spirituality more public. She'd make a great pastor. This is posted by Paul Crookston from the Washington Free Beacon. It says Hillary Clinton wants to preach, begins a piece by The Atlantic, which is, of course, a liberal magazine, by Emma Green, relaying a comment from Shaladi, who is Pastor Bill Shaladi, that's Hillary's pastor, for many years. Clinton has been discussing going into ministry, and Shaladi thinks the former First Lady could definitely do what he does. Given her depth of knowledge of the Bible and her experience of caring for people and loving people, she'd make a great pastor. Well, I'm going to repeat that in the next article, I think. I didn't mean to read it in this one, but it's worth repeating, I guess, just for the shock value. Anyway, Emma Green argues such an attitude perfectly captures Clinton's long campaign to modulate and sometimes obscure expressions of her faith. Shaladi and others consider Clinton's faith central to her public service and blamed critics for obscuring her faith. Of course, blame the critics. Always blame someone. It's been there all along, Shaladi says. The general public didn't necessarily want to accept the fact that she's a Christian because there's so many critics out there about the Clintons. Now, why would that be? I don't get it. Why are there so many critics? Clinton doesn't wear her religion on her sleeve. She just practices it, Shaladi said. Oh, by the way, he was a speaker at the Democratic National Convention 2016 when Hillary was running for president. She follows the edict of what's attributed to St. Francis. Preach the gospel always, and if you need to, use words. Shaladi's book, Strong for a Moment Like This, may be the start of a more public-facing spirituality for Clinton. Shaladi is publishing the book after her suggestion and said it is free from concerns about image or politics. He prepared daily devotions for Clinton from the start of her campaign, and he also partnered with over 100 female ministers who formed the group We Pray With Her. Shaladi holds that the book finds its center in spirituality and not politics, despite its origins in the campaign. It's an inspirational book, he said. I do not believe that she encouraged me to write this book in any way to change the image of her. Yeah, right. She really found the devotional so helpful to her in the midst of the contentious campaign that she felt that people would find some hope from it. Still, Shaladi gets in subtle shots at President Donald Trump and intends to respond to current events. Green wrote that some of those aspects of the book are intended to vindicate Clinton's spirituality as well as her political record. And then this is from Newsmax. Hillary Clinton's longtime pastor reveals she wants to preach. She told her longtime pastor she would like to pursue a position of spiritual leadership and Shalady, executive director of the United Methodist City Society, told the magazine, given her depth of knowledge of the Bible and her experience of caring for people, loving people, she'd make a great pastor. I'm sorry. This is not fake news. This is really, you can read it for yourself. He's the author of the new book, Strong for a Moment Like This, The Daily Devotions of Hillary Rodham Clinton, which will be published next week by Abingdon Press, which, of course, is the United Methodist Press. Very liberal denomination. Shalady told the Atlantic's Emma Green that Clinton, a Methodist, has always been greatly influenced by her faith. It's been there all along. The general public didn't necessarily want to accept the fact that she's a Christian because there's so many critics. There's that problem with those nagging critics again, the inconvenient truths that are out there. Now, there was several responses to this article, and I just wanted to comment on one. Of course, most of the, this is a conservative site, so most of the comments were incredulous that Hillary Clinton wants to be a pastor. But one gentleman wrote, give it up, you incredible ignoramuses. He says, you know, the Clintons, you know, are not perfect human beings. It says, the stuff you're accusing Clintons of has been looked at over and over for about 30 years with nothing to show, and you people are seriously complaining about the Russia investigation after several months. And he blathers on. But I just wanted to say, you know, in response to that comment, because that's what some people, are, of course, on the left are going to say, I would just say that, you know, Al Capone was only found to be guilty of tax evasion. And, of course, we know he was as pure as the freshly driven snow, or maybe never proven guilty in a court of law, for the same reasons as the Clintons. No witnesses are able to show up. I say that in jest, but not completely. And I think that's a good thing to remember, that because somebody's not proven guilty in a court of law, sometimes it's pretty clear what's the reality about that individual. And we have many, many years to look at the Clintons in their life, their public life. Another article was called Aspiring Pastor Hillary Goes from Seances and Spirit Cooks to Bible Thumping. According to Deep States, and this is by, it's from Zero Point Now is the author. According to Deep State Department of Brand Management and Optics, Atlantic Division, the ever-pious Hillary Clinton wants to become a pastor, a move which is sure to bring religious Rust Belt swing voters back to the blue side for any future political endeavors. This is what she told Bill Shalady, her pastor, and at a recent photo shoot. Last fall, the former Newsweek editor, Kenneth Woodward, revealed that Clinton told him in 1994 that she thought all the time about becoming an ordained Methodist minister. She asked him not to write about it, though. It will make me seem much too pious. The incident perfectly captures Clinton's long campaign to modulate and sometimes obscure expressions of her faith. That's from the Atlantic. Because what better way to make people forget about a massive pay-for-play scheme raping Haiti and a bitchy image than God? Anyway, while Hillary has apparently been in the closet for decades over her desire to preach, she turned heads in the 90s when investigative journalist Bob Woodward wrote in his book, The Choice, that Clinton held imaginary conversations with Eleanor Roosevelt and Mahatma Gandhi as therapeutic release. When an advisor suggested that she communicate with Jesus Christ, she declined, saying it would be too personal. Of course, New Age leader Jean Houston led her in these channeling sessions where she was in contact with deceiving spirits, demonics, deception in the White House. Now, that's all I really want to say or quote from that article. But I also want to just remind you that Tony Robbins, another New Age leader, was around the same time visiting Bill Clinton at the White House. Now, for the rest of my time, I want to talk about Norman Vincent Peale. I want to review a little bit the connection, though, with Marianne Williamson and some of the people who have been influenced by Norman Vincent Peale, and see that, you know, just look at this connection. I mentioned in the article from the Apologetics Index last week that Marianne Williamson has been associated with Unity, the Unity cult, Unity School of Christianity, where I visited several times to their headquarters in the Kansas City area, greater Kansas City area. And, of course, we also read from the Let Us Reason article And also in that article, the Apologetics Index, we talked about the Course in Miracles. And then in the Let Us Reason article, we talked about the Course, which has been taught at Robert Schuller's Crystal Cathedral. And so you see this connection with Schuller. And, of course, Robert Schuller was mentored by Norman Vincent Peale. He's proud to admit that to that connection. So I wanted to point that out because this thing seems to continue on. And, you know, so that we will see the spiritual affinity of Marianne Williamson with Robert Schuller and his mentor, Norman Vincent Peale. Now, the question might be asked, why do Norman Vincent Peale and Robert Schuller, who are both deceived, matter to the church today? And I'll tell you why. Because Norman Vincent Peale's influence and mentoring of Robert Schuller and Robert Schuller's influence and mentoring of at least his compromised mega church models to both Bill Hybels and Rick Warren. There's a succession of influence here that I think still affects the church even today, even as these two men have passed away. Now, to get that started, I want to point out a couple of things. This is an article called Religious Science and New Thought from the John Ankerberg Show. Dave Hunt was a guest on this program. Dave is with the Lord now. He's passed on. But his comments, and I will go back to this article a little bit later, but his comments concerning Peale and Schuller, he said, Norman Vincent Peale, a 33-degree Mason, and his chief disciple, Robert Schuller, kept New Thought, you know, which is, of course, a mind science cult, alive within mainstream Christianity so that its tenets are even widely embraced among evangelicals today. Okay? Now, Schuller calls Peale, or called Peale, the man who has impacted and influenced my thinking and my theology and my life more than any other living person. Peale borrowed from Fillmore, and that's the film Myrtle Fillmore, the phrase positive thinking that made Peale famous, and credited Ernest Holmes with making him into a positive thinker. Ernest Holmes formed the Divine Science Cult, wrote the book Science of Mind. Now, also, the next succession of influence, Article 2, I guess you could say, there was a conference, I should say, in California, and I actually visited. I didn't go into the conference, but I was at the grounds of the Crystal Cathedral back in the day, and Roger Oakland also visited down there, and he wrote an article called Rethinking Revised, and it's concerning this conference, which was known as Rethinking, the Rethink Conference, you know, Rethinking Christianity, basically, was the idea. Now, in this article, he mentions that the conference opened with a onstage dialogue between Schuller and Irwin McManus, of course, who is an emerging church leader. And Schuller gave a brief overview of his accomplishments through his many years of ministry. He explained how pleased he was to be able to look back at the tremendous leaders he had mentored over the years, which include Willow Creek's seeker-friendly pioneer pastor, Bill Hybels, the 6-million-member Church of God in Christ Bishop Charles Blake, and Rick Warren, who has pioneered the purpose-driven church and the purpose-driven life. And then, of course, another article in my succession of influence articles here, I guess you could say, was this is something I picked up at the Crystal Cathedral. This was from, of course, 2003. But this was the Institute for Successful Church Leadership that Robert Schuller led. And some of the speakers at this conference, of course, included Irwin McManus, who helped put on the Rethink Conference, but also Bill Hybels, previously mentioned as one of those who were mentored and influenced by Schuller. And then Leonard Sweet, and I'm not naming all the names on here, but Leonard Sweet, of course, is a very big leader in the emergent church, and is also a United Methodist pastor, like Hillary wants to be. Now, there was an article some time ago, also several years ago, by Chris Roseboro, a pirate Christian, and he's in discernment ministry, of course. He does a great job. And he was commenting on a WorldNet Daily interview with Rick Warren, where Warren tried to distance himself from the claim that he had been mentored by Robert Schuller. And, of course, for the sake of time, I'll only spend some of my time with this, but it's interesting, just so you know the facts. And here are the facts. He says, the person who really said that Rick Warren was heavily influenced by Robert Schuller was his wife, Rick Warren's wife, Kay Warren. Here's what Kay Warren told Christianity Today back in November of 2002. During his last year in seminary, he and Kay drove west to visit Robert Schuller's Institute for Church Growth. We had a very stony ride out to the conference, she says, because such non-traditional ministry scared her to death. Schuller, though, won them over. He had a profound influence on Rick, Kay says. We were captivated by his positive appeal to non-believers. I never looked back. And by the way, that conference, the Rethink conference I was telling you about, Kay Warren was actually scheduled to speak at that conference. I think she backed out of that at the last minute. But she was one of the scheduled speakers at the Rethink conference of Robert Schuller and Erwin McManus down at the Crystal Cathedral back in the day. It says, it is very clear from Kay's account that attending Robert Schuller's Institute was a life-changing event for Rick Warren. That's the same institute that I mentioned earlier, the Institute for Successful Church Leadership. It says, we read two paragraphs later, imitating Schuller, Warren walked the then unincorporated but fast-growing town of Lake Forest, asking what kept people from going to church. You know, they went out and they did surveys, the same way that Schuller did when he started his church in an old drive-in theater, which became the Crystal Cathedral. Went out and asked people what they wanted in a church instead of starting a church based on the Bible. So he followed that style of Rick Warren followed Mr. Schuller's style there. It says, it is very clear from Kay's account that attending Robert Schuller's Institute was, I'm repeating myself, I'm sorry. So far, we've learned that according to Rick Warren's wife, and it says she is definitely a member of his family and a firsthand eyewitness to the events reported in an interview with Christianity Today, that Rick Warren and his wife attended Robert Schuller's Institute for Church Growth. Robert Schuller won them over. Rick and Kay were captivated by Schuller's positive appeal to non-believers. Robert Schuller had a profound influence on Rick. That's Kay Warren's words, not the man from Pirate Radio, whose name escapes me right now. I'm sorry about that. Chris Roseboro. says, when Warren started Saddleback Church, he imitated Robert Schuller. That's the fifth point there. But wait, there's more. Robert Schuller himself has written about his influence on Rick Warren. Said Schuller, what has been accomplished already through this church is phenomenal because of the dedicated members and friends we have. I see the results today of the Institute for Successful Church Leadership, which we dared to launch 35 years ago, and it is still growing strong. Here, ministers are inspired to believe in their dreams and to present the good news of the gospel in positive terms. And some of those students are well known. There's Rick Warren, a pastor who today is phenomenal. He came to our institute time after time. And in Christianity Today, his wife was quoted as saying, when we came to that institute, we were blown away how God had blessed him. And today, Rick Warren is blessing millions of people. But wait, there's even more. Schuller's own website claims that Rick Warren was mentored at Schuller's Church Growth Institute. Said Schuller's website, we are the home of the world's first growth institute launching the megachurch movement in the 20th century. Tens of thousands of pastors, including famous graduates Rick Warren, Bill Hybels, and Bishop Blake. Schuller himself not only corroborates Kay Warren's story in Christianity Today, he claims that Rick Warren came to his institute time after time and that Warren was mentored there. In his interview with WorldNet Daily, Rick Warren is only technically correct in saying he wasn't mentored by Robert Schuller. This is due to the fact that Schuller didn't personally do the mentoring, but, you know, he was there, he was mentored through the Institute. I guess that's the point. I don't want to read the whole quote in the interest of time. Here's the bottom line. Using only Kay Warren and Robert Schuller's testimony, one could describe Rick's relationship with Schuller in this way. While Rick Warren was in seminary, he and his wife traveled by car to attend Robert Schuller's Institute for Church Growth. He was won over, captivated by Schuller's positive approach, had a profound influence on Rick Warren. As a result, Warren was mentored at Schuller's Church Growth Institute. He visited the Institute time after time. Now, why am I spending all this time? Again, I'm trying to show the succession of influence from Peel to Shuler to Rick Warren to Bill Hybels to others who have made such a tremendous impact, of course, on professing Christendom in this day and have created so many problems. Now, let's move on to the John Ankerberg program, the Religious Science and New Thought article. This is actually, there's some information that was printed on this article from The Occult Invasion by Dave Hunt. A great book, one of the best books Dave Hunt has written, one of my favorites. Of course, Seduction of Christianity and A Woman Rides the Beast. There's many excellent books. Those are three of my favorites. Anyway, I've already read a little bit about Peel and Shuler here, but Dave goes on to say, Charles Braden's definitive work on New Thought identifies Norman Vincent Peel as the one man through whose ministry, essentially, New Thought ideas and techniques have been made known most widely in America. Peel continually spoke of the universe as mental, of God as energy, and of prayer as the scientific technique for releasing God energy according to definite laws. The following statements reveal Peel's basic science of mind teaching. The world you live in is mental and not physical. Change your thought and you change everything. Your unconscious mind has a power that turns wishes into realities when the wishes are strong enough. And of course, these are quotes from Norman Vincent Peale. That was from Positive Imaging. Who is God? Some theological being? God is energy. As you breathe God in, as you visualize his energy, you will be re-energized. Prayer power is a manifestation of energy. Just as there exist scientific techniques for the release of atomic energy, so are there scientific procedures for the release of spiritual energy through the mechanism of prayer. New and fresh spiritual techniques are being constantly discovered. Experiment with prayer power. Prayer is a procedure by which spiritual power flows from God, releases forces and energies, and brings many other astounding results. As in any skill or science, one must learn step by step the formula for opening the circuit and receiving this power. Any method through which you can stimulate the power of God to flow into your mind is legitimate. Any scientific use of power. Now, I want to move along. I believe I will probably need to take another week next week to finish with Norman Vincent Peale. And at some point in the future, I will do a comprehensive study on Spiritism and Spiritualism. And you'll see Norman Vincent popping up there a lot as this man went straight into the occult. Unknown, you know, by many Christians. But we're beginning to see some of the things already. Now, this is an article from Watchman Fellowship, and they do some great profiles of different heresies, heretics, false prophets, occultists, all kinds of stuff. But in this particular profile on Norman Vincent Peale, and this is an older profile, you read, Watchman Fellowship frequently receives requests to expose certain teachers who may be teaching poor and harmful doctrine. We may sympathize, but must decline if we feel they are right on the essentials. But occasionally, through our research, we find people who may be well-known and influential, and I might add, popular, yet definitely fall into the category of false teachers. You see, they couldn't overlook Norman Vincent Peale. They had to expose him. God bless them for it. One of these is Norman Vincent Peale, publisher of Guidepost Magazine. That's right, Guidepost Magazine, for those of you who don't realize, that magazine is from Norman Vincent Peale, and writer of many books, including the best-selling Power of Positive Thinking. Our conclusion, after much research, is that Norman Vincent Peale is a universalist. That is, he believes that everyone is going to heaven if they believe in a God and have some redeeming value, which is just about everyone. This is evidenced by several situations documented in Peale's life. On March 28, 1980, Dr. Peale was the featured speaker at an 85th birthday dinner honoring Mormon prophet, speaker Spencer Kimball. The official Mormon newspaper reported that Brigham Young University bestowed an honorary degree on Dr. Peel. Boy, I dropped that right in the file 13 in the trash can. But anyway, included on the same page was a transcription of a radio address Peel made on April 27, 1975, when Dr. Peel received a blessing from Prophet Kimball. In this radio address, Peel said that he had been struggling with a difficulty for several weeks. While speaking in Salt Lake City, he was invited to be received by the president of the church. After lauding the righteous Mormon church, Peel said, "I met these men of God, met with these men of God, these three dedicated Christian leaders." This is the Mormon First Presidency, as they're known. "I felt he, Kimball, was so spiritual." Peel then related how the three leaders laid hands on him and prayed. Peel stated, "Sir, he is here. I feel his presence." And that was the emphasis of this writer. To that, I had to make a little note. "Eat your heart out, Joel Osteen." You know, because Joel, of course, believed that Mitt Romney was a Christian. You know, Mitt Romney, the Mormon. And he believed that because Mitt Romney said, "I believe in Jesus." And Joel, of course, believes in Jesus. So, obviously, Mitt Romney is a Christian. Well, it's very simple, isn't it? except that Mitt Romney believes in the Mormon Jesus, which is not the Jesus of the Bible, which is actually a spiritual counterfeit Jesus. But anyway, Joel also believes that Mormons are Christians. And so you see that he and Mr. Peel had a lot in common. And I might add, Joel Osteen, I don't know if he was influenced at all by Peel. I'm not aware either way. But he had the same type of positive, change your life and prosperity. It was very similar to me, some of the influence, the positivity of Joel Osteen is what I'm trying to say. Now, Dave Hunt in The Seduction of Christianity documents on page 152 that Peel was the guest on the Phil Donahue show and denied the necessity to be born again. Remember that universalist business. The transcript was from October 23rd, 1984. Also, Peel called the virgin birth some theological idea of no importance to salvation. Now, before I move on, I want to reemphasize the value and the importance of the book, The Seduction of Christianity. If you can get your hands on a copy of it, it is one of the most important books, I think, of our contemporary times. And as I already mentioned, The Occult Invasion. But excellent book. Now, I see I'm just about out of time. So I think I'm going to continue next week with Norman Vincent Peel, close out the chapter on him until we get back to him later in the study of Spiritism on down the road. I hope that you will benefit from looking at some of these ancient lies and heresies which have invaded the church and are still coming through even to this day. That's not to say that people like Rick Warren or Bill Hybels are teaching some of these occult ideas, but at the same time, they're compromising in many ways, similarly, as we will see next week, as did Peel and Schuller. So God bless you all, and good night. I hope we will see you next week.